Good day, and welcome to the President's Commission on Law Enforcement and the Administration of Justice conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Director Phil Keith. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Ryan, and good afternoon, and thank everyone for joining us today. I call the President's Commission on Law Enforcement and the Administration of Justice to order. On behalf of Attorney General Barr, we thank you for joining us today for this important commission teleconference meeting. Need a quick check for everybody to check the mute on their phone device. Thank you. The focus of today's hearing will be law enforcement accreditation. We look forward to hearing from these exceptional and remarkable leaders today. As many of you know, on June the 16th, the President signed an executive order on safe policing for safe communities. Last week, we heard testimony about use of force, including excessive use of force, an area of focus in the President's executive order. That robust discussion has helped us lay the framework for this commission to develop a deeper dive into the issue and look at recommendations for improvements in addition to the other executive order implementation work that lies ahead. This panel is uniquely qualified to discuss the topic of accreditation and will provide this commission with their insight and expertise. I have no doubt the panels will deliver the same level of dynamic testimony as they share with us their expertise on accreditation, principal tenet of the President's executive order. Just as a note, joining us today, Chief Jeff Hughes from Brentwood, Tennessee Police Department, is joining us today. He lost an officer in the line of duty last week and is making a special effort to be prepared for this hearing and join us today. Our prayers and thoughts are with Chief Hughes and his entire department. At this time, I'll ask our Executive Director, Dean Keeter, to conduct the roll call of commissioners.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And before I call the roll, I'd just like to remind everyone that today's event is open to the press. And for any members of the media on the call, if you have any questions or need clarification on anything, please contact Christina Master-Pasqua in the Justice Department's Office of Public Affairs. And with that, I will call the roll. Commissioner Bowditch. Commissioner Clemens.
Present.
Commissioner Evans. Commissioner Frazier.
Present.
Commissioner Galtieri.
I'm here.
Commissioner Hawkins.
Present, thank you.
Commissioner Lombardo.
I'm here, thank you.
Commissioner McDonald.
Good afternoon, present.
Commissioner Moody. Commissioner Parr.
I'm here.
Commissioner Price.
Good afternoon, I'm here.
Commissioner Ramsey. Commissioner Rauch.
I'm here.
Commissioner Samaniego.
I'm here.
Commissioner Smallwood.
I'm here.
Vice Chair Sullivan.
I'm here, thank you.
And Commissioner Washington.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, that concludes the roll call.
Thank you, Dean. And Commissioner Moody and Ramsey will be joining the call late.
Okay,
any other announcements?
No, sir. We are good to go.
Thank you. We again want to acknowledge the continuing commitment of our commissioners, certainly the working groups and the witnesses we have today and previous commission hearings, and the federal staff toward meeting the goals of this historic commission. On behalf of Attorney General Barr, we thank each of you. As noted on previous calls, we encourage commissioners to take notes during the testimony of the panelists, and we'll then open for questions from commissioners after the last witness. Our first distinguished panelist today is Director Dean Register, who is the director of the Florida Department of Law Enforcement and also serves as the Peace Officer Standards and Training Director for the state of Florida. Director Register oversees the competency and professional conduct of Florida's criminal justice officers, as well as the training for Florida's criminal justice community and the Florida Department of Law Enforcement members through the bureaus of professional development, training, standards, policy, and special programs. Director Register earned his bachelor's degree from Florida State University, and he has 35 years of law enforcement experience. Thank you for joining us today, Director Register. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that introduction. You covered sort of my background of where I come from, and also our division here also provides staff and support to the Florida Accreditation Commission. Proud to say that Florida has a very long history of embracing and supporting accreditation. Also glad to say the very first agency that was accredited by CLIA was a Florida agency back in the early 1980s. Currently, Florida has 45 agencies who are accredited by CLIA, and in 1995, the state of Florida created their state accreditation process. Florida accreditation programs accredit both law enforcement, correctional facilities, pretrial and probation, and offices of inspector general. Currently, Florida has over 250 entities that are accredited by our state accreditation system. I would like to spend my time today looking at the other speakers. I think we're going to hear about the value of accreditation and what it does for an agency. But I would like to spend probably the most of my time talking about the process itself. As was stated in the testimony that I provided, we feel there are several key components that are required to build and maintain a successful accreditation process. And that's where I would like to spend my time going through and hitting some of the high points on the testimony that I provided. First one that we come up with that we think is very important is legitimacy. The Florida program was formed by the legislature with significant input from the Florida Police Chiefs Association and the Florida Sheriffs Association. The Florida accreditation program is supported by state statute. It subsequently created extensive bylaws and also a comprehensive policy and procedures manual to guide in the carrying out the accreditation process within Florida. Early on, it established very clear objectives that were formed back in 1995, and they still continue to guide the commission today. Those objectives, as is in your material, is establishing and maintaining standards that represent current professional law enforcement practices, increasing effectiveness and efficiencies, establishing standards that address and reduce liability, and establishing standards that make an agency and its personnel accountable to the community they serve. The second tenet that we come up with was independence. The accrediting body, in our view, needs to have some form of or level of independence. Florida Statute 943.125 is basically the statute that lays out the accreditation process and also lays out the commission and also states that the Florida Accreditation Commission shall remain independent from any law enforcement agency. The commission that makes up our accreditation commission consists of five sheriffs appointed by the Florida Sheriffs Association, five police chiefs appointed by the Police Chiefs Association. We have one representative appointed by the State Law Enforcement Chiefs Association. We have one member who is either a mayor, city commission, city manager, or other representative who is appointed by the Florida League of Cities. We have a county commissioner appointed by the Association of Counties. And we have an appellate or circuit court judge who is appointed by the Florida Supreme Court. Lastly, making up our commission is one representative appointed by the Office of the Chief Inspector General, which is within the Executive Office of the Governor. These men and women make up a commission. Each one of them come from an accredited agency, and I can assure you the commission is invested in the process as much as the accreditation managers and the rest of their staff. Additionally, assessors that we use in Florida are carefully selected and trained. They are chosen from the ranks to include from command staff members, accreditation managers, and other invested parties from accredited agencies across the state. Assessment teams are formed with consideration of diversity and also possible conflicts of interest to ensure that they're carrying out the duties of the commission. Next tenet that we come up with was remaining relevant and current. Standards used currently are the result of over 20 years of continuous development here in Florida. As stated earlier, we've got right around 250 standards that our Florida agencies have to comply with. The Standard Review and Interpretation Committee was formed and consists, again, of command staff members, accreditation practitioners, and other invested parties. This committee meets three times a year and makes recommendations to the commission regarding new or amended standards. Proud to say that our standards do remain current and continue to move with the times and the trends. The next tenet we speak of is attainable and undue burdens. The fiscal impact of accreditation are not unavoidable. However, where possible, we feel that with our standards that we must keep in mind that when writing standards, we cannot make them to where a normal common agency cannot comply with them. Specific procedures or processes, hardware, software, infrastructure, and other requirements should be carefully evaluated. And where we go with that is just like a typical standard will say that you have to track your training throughout the agency. Some agencies may go out and spend $100,000 on a learning management system to meet that standard. But we submit to you that another agency of a smaller size can do the same thing with an Excel spreadsheet and a filing cabinet. So there again, a lot of times our standards are going to state what has to be done, but always trying to remain mindful of the infrastructure that it takes to do it and the expense that we're passing on to an agency for accreditation. Next is accountability. Obtaining accreditation is only the first step in maintaining accreditation, and successfully navigating the reaccreditation process is a true test. That's a very true statement in the fact that we see agencies come in, they obtain the initial accreditation, and as an assessor, we always tell them that the work has just begun. The true proof is when we come back in 3 years later with an assessment team from an independent body that literally goes in, reviews the agency from one end to the other, and confirms their compliance with the standards. The accountability component must be present. Like I say, accreditation is not a process where everybody gets a prize. Unfortunately, there are occasions when agencies fall outside of the standards and compliance, but it's important for the process to have a means to monitor, reevaluate, and to bring those agencies back on board. Also, in cases where it's required, it is required sometimes for an agency to lose their accreditation, and rightfully so. So in conclusion, wrapping up, we submit to you that any successful accrediting entity must have a formal structure. They need to maintain their independence. They need to maintain up to date with state and national trends. And also, their standards must be attainable by a wide range of agencies. And lastly, the accrediting body must hold the participating agencies accountable. And with that, I will stand down for the next presenter.
Thank you, Director Register, for your testimony today and for your decades of service to law enforcement. Our next distinguished panelist today is Sheriff Michael Atkins of Walton County, Florida Sheriff's Department. Sheriff Atkins is a sixth-generation native of Walton County and a 25-year law enforcement professional. In 2012, a team of state law enforcement assessors reviewing operations of the Sheriff's Office reported that under Sheriff Atkins' leadership, the Walton County Sheriff's Office has become one of Florida's premier law enforcement agencies. He is past president of the Florida Sheriff's Association and is a current member of the Board of Directors for the National Sheriff's Association. Additionally, Sheriff Atkinson is a member of the Florida Criminal Justice Executive Institute and police fellow at Radford University. Thank you for joining us today, Sheriff Atkinson. You're recognized.
Thank you, sir, for this opportunity to present testimony before you today. You know, you've heard Director Register kind of go over the technical issues involved with accreditation. I want to take more of a 30,000-foot view, if you will, and try to provide for you some of my experience as a past commissioner, how that influenced best practices and policy in organizations across the state. There are approximately 18,000 law enforcement agencies in the United States, of which roughly 838 are accredited. Pragmatically speaking, that's less than 1% of the agencies in this country hold some form of accreditation. That's a stunningly low number when you consider the scope of services and duties and really the expectations of the public that we serve. Truthfully, not all accreditation is created equal, and it's important that we realize that. But as Director Register said, he actually touched on three things that I think are the most important things about accreditation, which is it provides transparency, accountability, and the quality of standards. I want to give you a little background, if you will. In 2005, I was invited to speak at Florida A&M University, which is historically black college located in Tallahassee, Florida, shortly after the grand jury report from Ferguson came back. And I'll tell you, it was one of the most ritually rewarding and challenging speaking events of my life, but I learned a lot there. And one of the things I think is important to share in reference to accreditation with you is this. Those kids were asking a lot of the same questions. They had a lot of anger about certain policies and practices. And when I walked through the contextual reason behind some of these things, it was amazing how many kids understood and even agreed with certain practices. And going through the day, there was one student who really summed up the whole issue for me, which was this. He said, "Sheriff, why isn't anybody telling us this?" And it struck me, that is our failure as a profession to not be open about how and why we're doing things. And equally important is to do what we say we're going to do. The time has passed for us to be able to hide our policies and procedures cloaked entirely in under the mantle of officer safety. There's a time and a place for officer safety, but the reality is we have an obligation to the public to explain to them how and why we do business. That's how we earn what agencies really run on. They don't run on budgetary dollars. I mean, obviously we do at some level, but what we really operate on is a currency of trust. And if you want to build a currency of trust, you have to be transparent. Accreditation provides that opportunity. When your policies are publicly reviewed and when you're held accountable for what you say you're going to do. Director Register touched on something in Florida that I think is absolutely vital, which is agency accountability that is provided by the independence of the Florida Accreditation Commission. That statutory independence is critical. I can tell you over my time in the commission, I've had the opportunity to see agencies large and small come before that assessment team. And it's a very powerful thing to see mayors, police chiefs, sheriffs, county commissioners standing up and accepting responsibility for their organization, whether that is an action improvement plan, whether that is in the worst case scenarios, whether that is taking up accreditation. And I'll tell you, that accountability, you know, it struck me a couple of years ago, the commission took the accreditation of the fourth largest sheriff's office in the nation. They held them accountable. And that independence was the reason I believe they were able to do that without any form of undue influence or bias caused by things like fee-based support for accreditation. If you look across the country, you know, some of the organizations are strictly fee-backed. In other words, they support themselves with fees. That's something we want to watch and guard against. The independence of an accreditation commission and their review ensures agency accountability by relieving them of undue bias. Incredibly important. You know, it's not just about when agencies do things wrong as well. I want to point this out because I think Director Register touched on this. This issue of best practices was one of the most rewarding things that I saw during my time as a commissioner. It's where we had an opportunity to see reimagined policies and things that benefited the citizens we serve, innovative technical things that agencies brought forth and was highlighted in front of the commission. It was an opportunity to say, what is the best and brightest in what we do? as our profession continues to evolve. I highlighted a couple of programs that we adopted at our organization, but one specifically I want to address, which is the early intervention program. You know, we know that when officers engage in breach of conduct, very rarely was it spontaneous. In other words, there were indicators somewhere along the line, and someone failed to take action. What we did with this type of intervention program is we used rudeness as one of the indicators. So should an officer or deputy get a certain number of complaints in a defined period of time for rudeness, it automatically triggers a review of that officer. That's critically important for two reasons. One, for the officer, because it gives us the opportunity to see, is this a training issue? Is there other things going on? Do we have a problem here? It's important to the public that this is addressed. It's an indicator. It's not the sole indicator, but an indicator of future behavior. Here's the other thing. There is a time and a place to say, maybe you need to find another career. This is not the right place for you. But the early intervention program allows us to do that in a fair and unbiased manner early on when the problem is first noticed before it becomes a major issue. It's critically important. And then an educational-based discipline program. I've listed that in my written testimony. It is, I think, dovetail nicely with the early intervention program. But the education-based discipline was a program that came out of the Harvard Kennedy School from L.A. County Sheriff's Office, but yet it's adopted here in Florida. It is a fantastic program that allows us to make deputies and officers better, not bitter, which benefits the public we serve as well as our staff members. I want to close with this. I've given you a couple of recommendations that I think are important, but the one singularly most important thing is that state commissions be independently, statutorily chartered, and have the funding necessary to conduct themselves in a manner that upholds the best and brightest in our public policies and accountability. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheriff Atkins, for your valued testimony today and certainly for your many years of service to law enforcement. Our next distinguished panelist is Chief Jeff Hughes of the Brentwood, Tennessee Police Department. Chief Hughes began his career with the Brentwood Police Department in February of 1986 and is now in his 35th year with the city of Brentwood. Chief Hughes has a total of 37 years of law enforcement experience, having started his career with the Fairview Police Department in 1983. He has an earned undergraduate degree from Middle Tennessee State University and is an active member and past president of Tennessee Association of Chiefs of Police and the International Association of Chiefs of Police. He also serves as a legislative chair for the TACP and very actively involved in his community. Chief Hughes is recognized by his peers in Tennessee and throughout the country for his leadership and guidance on challenging issues. He was instrumental in the development of the state accreditation program in Tennessee and serves as a subject matter expert on accreditation. Brentwood Police Department has been accredited through the Commission on Accreditation for Law Enforcement Agencies since 1989 and also accredited through the Tennessee Law Enforcement Accreditation Program with the Tennessee Association of Chiefs of Police since 2015. Thank you for joining us today, Chief Hughes, and you're certainly recognized.
Thank you, Director Keith, and thank you for your kind comments at the onset about the loss of our officer last week. A little bit more about the Brentwood Police Department. We are proud to be the most tenured agency in the state of Tennessee to be accredited through CALEA. We received our initial award in 1989, and of all the agencies that are certified through CALEA, no one has been accredited longer through that credentialing body. We also are accredited through the state program, the Tennessee Law Enforcement Accreditation Program, and have been since 2015. In Tennessee, you have basically two options to become certified by two different credentialing bodies, one being CALEA, the other being the Tennessee Association of Chiefs of Police through the Tennessee Law Enforcement Accreditation Program. If I could wave a magic wand and give everyone the resources necessary and the ability to be nationally certified through CALEA, that would be wonderful. But we know that's not feasible and certainly not practical for most police departments in the country. And that primarily was the reason that Tennessee, the Chiefs Association, looked to develop a program that would involve those agencies within our state that could not afford to be CALEA certified, or they didn't necessarily have the time and the resources that that CALEA put on them. In Tennessee, through our CALEA program, we currently have 59 accredited agencies, and we have 18 other agencies that are in the self-assessment phase. And to kind of give you a breakdown of the demographics, 200-plus agencies in the state of Tennessee have 10 or less police officers. So when you ask an agency to look at accreditation as an option for improving their professionalism and excellence within their department, you're talking about folks that, you know, their primary concern is staffing the street and answering calls, and they, you know, their budgets are tight and they don't have the ability to deal with the demands, the process itself that accreditation puts on you. So we look to utilize the members within our association to make that a more palatable opportunity for smaller agencies. And I think by the numbers that we have involved over about a 10-year period here, we've done a really good job to get where we are currently at. Obviously, I'm a huge advocate for accreditation. I support any vehicle that will allow for the promotion of excellence and professionalism in law enforcement. In the CALEA program, we pared our standards down to 164 compared to CALEA, who requires 459. And obviously some of those are optional standards or may be considered not applicable. But in Tennessee, we wanted to focus more on the core standards that address the high-risk critical tasks that impact law enforcement operations and create exposure to liability litigation, and focus on those things that we thought were of the utmost importance to bring everyone in the state of Tennessee up to a level of standard that makes us all look good in the state. Trying to bring those that are maybe weak in policy development or in training, areas of training, and giving them some guidance and some baselines to work toward improving within their own departments. So in Tennessee, we actually contracted with a third-party vendor to prepare legally sound policies that address every standard in our program. And that was paid for by our association. And we provide those policies to every chief in the state of Tennessee at no cost. And we've got a legal officer section in our Chiefs Association that is tasked with reviewing those policies and making sure that they are current and still legally sound. That takes a huge burden off of those chiefs of police who don't have the administrative staff within their departments to create those policies, and if they do create them or if they borrow them from the neighboring agency and simply put their name on it, they don't have the time to review them routinely and make sure that they're current and up to date and still applicable. We look to accreditation as keeping us relevant and transparent to those that we serve, and I would also, if I could just back up just for a second, we were talking about the state level compared to CALEA. We also participate in a national network called AccredNet, and It's my understanding there are approximately 35 of the 50 states that participate in this in this network. And CALEA accredits about 5% of all law enforcement agencies in the country. That's a very, very low number. But they account for about 25% of all law enforcement officers, which tells you that their target, for obvious reasons, is larger departments, people that can't afford or don't have the resources to participate in CALEA. So it's been our experience, as with our state program, TALEA, and looking across the country and networking with these other 35 states, that more agencies are involved in state programs than are involved in the national program. That's not saying one's better than the other. It's just saying that it's probably more feasible for agencies to participate in their state programs than CALEA. Obviously, the smaller the agency, the bigger the challenge. Accreditation is a voluntary process. We all know that. Why would any agency want to take on that additional work? What is the value of it? That's kind of the big hurdle in selling this to smaller agencies and trying to get people on board. And until you truly understand the internal and external benefits, you don't really wrap your mind around what that looks like. That's why I would stress the importance of incentives when looking at encouraging agencies to become accredited. They should want to become accredited and not have to from a regulatory standpoint. I would like to touch on the recommendations that was noted in my testimony, my written testimony, and it kind of follows up on what I just said. I think that we've got to look at ways of providing financial incentives to accredited agencies or to those agencies that want to become accredited, recognizing that the majority of those agencies are small departments that struggle just to take care of the basic task in serving their communities and the administrative struggles that come with that, and not to mention the financial obstacles. Certifying credentialing bodies. You know, we know everyone knows about CALEA, and they're certainly reputable and well known not only in the United States but even throughout the country. But we've got states that have programs. Some are tied to their chiefs associations. Some are private entities that are not tied at all. I think there is value in certifying those credentialing bodies so that there is some universal norms in what we're trying to accomplish as law enforcement across the country. Thirdly, I think use of force is one of the things that we are all having to take a look at now in regard to our policies. This is a standard that requires a policy for those agencies that are accredited, and we utilize the accreditation tool to force us to review those policies, make sure those policies are in place, and address all of the multifaceted issues as they are related to use of force. It's not just you know, use of force is an umbrella. Under that umbrella, you've got issues such as warning shots, rendering aid after you use force, training on your use of force policy, proficiency in your training, in-service training. You got less lethal options. You've got the reporting requirements. You've got the administrative review on those use of force reports, and then you've got the annual analysis. And to that point, accrediting agencies are already documenting this. I would propose that we need a use of force database so we can track this information, and we have real number and real data as to what we're looking at nationally as it relates to the use of force in law enforcement. And we could report that through our state programs, like in Tennessee, it's Tivers, and that could be forwarded on to Nivers on the national level. And finally, I would state that we've got to do a better job on the front end. And again, this is required through accreditation standards with our selection processes and our background investigations. We've got to get it right on the front end. To that point, I would stress the need to mandate that every agency and every state be required to report to a national decertification database that officers and agencies could go to when they look at hiring potential applicants that have previously worked for another department, so that you don't have these gypsy cops that are jumping from one agency to another, one state to another, and they perhaps have a less than desirable pass that's coming with them. To that point, when you look at the officer that was involved in the George Floyd incident, he had, if my memory serves me correct, 18 prior complaints or investigations in his file. I don't know the details of that, but it concerns me that somebody that has that much in his file could still be employed as a police officer if those were substantiated. I'm afraid, especially in our union states, that once they get in the door, sometimes unions unfortunately protect those that don't need to be protected. And I think we can do a better job on the front end with our selection processes and our background investigations. And I think the national database on decertified officers and mandating that everyone use that would be very helpful. And I probably went over my time. I hope I didn't ramble too much, but I think I've covered primarily what I wanted to cover, and I look forward to the opportunity to answer questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Hughes, for your testimony here today and certainly for your decades of service to law enforcement. Our next distinguished panelist is Director Tim Burgos, who is Executive Director of the Michigan Commission on Law Enforcement Standards, a position he's held since January of 2018. He retired from the Township of Kalamazoo, Michigan Police Department in December of 2017 after 41 years of service. Started with his department as a cadet, worked his way up through all ranks, and since 2003, he's been the chief of police. He is a past president of Michigan Association of Chiefs of Police and has served on several boards and commissions in the criminal justice arena. While chief, he's also held 4 gubernatorial appointments to the Council of Law Enforcement and Reinvention, Michigan Intelligence Operations Center for Homeland Security, the Mental Health Diversion Council, and the Michigan Commission on Law Enforcement Standards. Thank you for joining us today, Director Burgos, and you are now recognized.
Thank you, Chair Keith, for that kind introduction. And I consider it my honor and privilege to testify before you, Vice Chair Sullivan, and members of the Commission. I have 2 recommendations and hopefully some information that may be of assistance in your work. As the Chair mentioned, I'm the Executive Director of the Michigan Commission on Law Enforcement Standards, so that is Michigan's POST, the Police Officer Standards and Training Agency. I'm going to come at this from a little bit different angle today, speak to accreditation, but also to standards. And I hope you indulge me because standards is the core of my agency's work. So to develop a standard, we follow a defined deliberative process to produce a standard that fulfills its intended purpose, is valid and legally defensible. When I came to MCOLS, I joined IADLIST, the International Association of Directors of Law Enforcement Standards and Training. And right away, I noticed an incredibly wide range in the authority, responsibility, programming, and funding our sister agencies in other states had. In some cases, behavior by a law enforcement officer, which would lead to certification or license revocation in one state, was not actionable in another. So that brings me to my first recommendation to the Commission, and that is to support the development of nationwide standards for the selection, employment, training, licensing, retention, and revocation of licenses for law enforcement officers, and to incentivize their adoption by the states. I believe the public has the right to expect the same professional, knowledgeable, and ethical service from law enforcement, regardless of where they are in our country. So those standards should include screening standards, such as education, medical, non-medical standards, psychological suitability, physical preparedness, and character fitness. I heard Chief Hughes speak to a background investigation. That's what determines character fitness, probably the single most important thing we do in a screen. A standard that would allow full access to all state and federal criminal justice databases to screen applicants. Amazingly, right now, due to the rules in the Code of Federal Regulations, not all Academy applicants are screened against all databases. This is an issue that has been unsuccessfully addressed in the past. There is a perceived difference in screening for licensing versus criminal justice. I would contend licensing for criminal justice is a different matter. We are the gatekeepers for criminal justice employment. I would include standards for a national decertification or license revocation index with mandatory reporting, including reporting voluntary relinquishment of a license or a certification in lieu of other sanctions. As Chief Hughes noted, that helps stop problem officers from moving from not only department to department, but from state to state. IATLIS does run a decertification index and has for the past 20 years. All that is really lacking at this point is a mandate to use it. Standards for continuing professional education. This is necessary for any profession, particularly one that is as demanding and ever-changing as law enforcement. Standards for physical readiness, including medical and emotional health for officers. Law enforcement is very demanding, physically, mentally, emotionally, and we must help ensure that officers are fit for duty in every way and receive the care they need to remain that way. And lastly, standards for recruiting and community engagement. There is a need to recruit a law enforcement agency's members from the community and be reflective of that community. And such an agency will find it easier to engage the support of the community and build trust on both sides. And we must also recognize and attack some of the socioeconomic roadblocks to attracting recruits from all segments of the society. Now, turning for a minute to accreditation. As we've heard, there are a number of well-run accreditation programs, and they're a proven way to ensure policies and practices are practical, effective, and up-to-date. In short, it helps ensure that best practices are in use. They improve service and they reduce liability. Therefore, my second recommendation to the Commission is to support the development of nationwide basic standards for the accreditation of law enforcement agencies, post agencies, and training academies, and once again, incentivize their adoption. With respect to post agencies and academies, I am familiar with IATLIS program, which is very effective, and I would commend that to your examination. With respect to agencies, we've heard quite a bit of discussion already. There are clearly several excellent national, state, and law enforcement agency accreditation programs in existence. I'm particularly familiar with the Michigan Law Enforcement Accreditation Program. It's relatively new. It was started in 2016 by the Michigan Association of Chiefs of Police and patterned very closely after a similar program in New Jersey. They were recently joined by the Michigan Sheriff's Association. I heard Chief Hughes speak about agency size. In Michigan, we have 583 agencies. 60% of those agencies have 15 or less sworn officers. This is an example of an effective, affordable means of accreditation. It has 108 standards. And as mentioned, it is a member of AccredNet, which I think is very important, that federation of accreditation agencies. If I can speak just to a moment about funding, both Chief Hughes and I mentioned the word incentives when it comes to adopting standards in accreditation. Funding is critical to make these things a reality. State and local law enforcement training was largely underfunded prior to the pandemic, and since then, state budgets have fallen off the cliff. The resources of the federal government are clearly needed here. How that funding is delivered is key, and perhaps incentivization is a good model to look at. It provides agencies with the resources necessary to carry out this work, work that they want to do, but they're in some cases prohibited just due to finances and staffing. Mandates without resources can do little to implement positive change in cash-strapped state and local governments. And lastly, a common theme in my comments has been about successful programs that are already in operation. Clearly, excellent professional resources already exist in these areas, so I would respectfully suggest that the most cost and time-effective method to move forward is to take stock of what currently exists, assemble and, where possible, enhance best practices, and then incentivize their adoption.
Well,
thank you for this opportunity to speak to you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Director Burgos, for your testimony here today and certainly for your many years of service to law enforcement.
Yeah. Got to be in here, but take one of these new ones. Okay, guys.
Try one of these. I can get it ready.
I
can get it. Brian, can you mute that one for me?
Yes, I will locate that line.
Okay, our last distinguished panelist today is Chief Vince Nitsky of the Colorado Springs, Colorado Police Department. Chief Nitsky joined the Colorado Springs Police Department in February of 1989. And after working with Trove for a number of years, he was assigned as instructor at the Training Academy and has worked in various positions throughout the Colorado Springs Police Department. Rose to the ranks of the Colorado Springs Department and was promoted to the Chief of Police in 2019. Chief Nitsky holds a Bachelor of Arts degree from the University of Northern Colorado. He's a graduate of the Center of Creative Leadership and the Police Executive Research Forum's Senior Management Institute for Police. Thank you for joining us today, Chief Nitsky. You're recognized.
Oh, good afternoon. Thank you, Chairman Keith and Commissioners. It is my honor to appear as a witness before you today. I appreciate the opportunity to discuss our experiences with credentialing through the Commission on Accreditation of Law Enforcement Agencies, as well as my recommendations based on working in a department that has been voluntarily accredited for nearly 30 years. My agency has had positive experiences with accreditation, and we have made internal changes based on a deeper look at issues brought forward in the CALEA assessment processes. I have found CALEA to offer our agency a framework for continuous self-assessment and improvement. Our participation in CALEA also provides the benefit of independent, informed oversight of our most important policies, practices, and training. Even with these benefits, my recommendations today may sound more like cautions or critical considerations for accreditation rather than endorsement of mandated national standards. That would be a fair characterization of where I land on this topic. I have detailed 6 specific recommendations in my written testimony. I'll cover them briefly and then follow up with more information. My first recommendation is to focus standards on the most important policing issues rather than all issues related to policing. As others have mentioned, ensure the standards are attainable by all sizes of departments. Secondly, focus standards on what components must be included in a policy, practice, or training, but do not dictate specific languages for all departments. Recommendation 3, be cautious when requiring something in a standard that goes beyond the Constitution and case law. And if you must go beyond that, please be sure the requirement is based on scientifically valid information. My fourth recommendation is to view the accreditation process as a learning and improvement process rather than a process tied to federal oversight when an agency has areas that need to be addressed. Please consider offering grant funding for programs to become voluntary accredited. As others have mentioned, the cost of accreditation can be pricey, and I'm not sure a lot of smaller agencies across the country can afford it without having the opportunity to have grant funds afforded to them. Finally, I recommend that you intentionally include the perspective of law enforcement officers in the field when moving forward. You need a perspective from those that work in law enforcement day to day, that are on the streets dealing with their communities, to move forward with this process. I want to say a bit more about my third recommendation, which is about standards staying in the range of legal requirements. I know you've had witnesses testify specifically about the use of force, and I don't want to step too far into that realm. But I'm concerned in my own state of Colorado, and in looking at some other states, there's been a tendency to place constraints on officers' use of force that go way beyond the objective reasonableness standard from the United States Supreme Court. I certainly am not suggesting that the law or policy standard should remain static or that we should never require more than the law. However, we should be cautious in piling requirements on officers, particularly those that are not evidence-based. For example, de-escalation policies, practices, and training are generally viewed as necessary in the use of force. To my knowledge, there is no empirical evidence that de-escalation policies and training results in fewer and less severe incidences of use of force. We are hearing more about codifying a requirement in state laws that officers have to exhaust all possible de-escalation options before using physical force, which I think completely disregards the realities of what happens in the field. I fear that more areas in the future, such as accreditation standards, may reflect this view. I think this is going down a dangerous path for public safety. Lastly, I would like to echo Sheriff Atkinson's comment that law enforcement has not educated their communities regarding what they do and how they do it. This is another area of improvement that law enforcement has to take across the country. I fully agree with his comment. I think we have not educated our communities well enough so that they understand what we do and how we do it. With that, I conclude and thank you for your time today. I am happy to answer questions during that portion of today's hearing.
Thank you, Chief Nitzke, for your testimony here today and certainly for your years of service to law enforcement. Commissioners, we are now open for questions to the witnesses. Commissioners with a question, please state your name prior to your question and direct the question to either a specific panelist or the entire panel. Just as a reminder to the commissioners, your mics are hot at all times. With that, commissioners with questions for our panelists.
Director Keith, this is Craig Price.
Commissioner Price is recognized.
Thanks. And this is a general question to the whole group, and I appreciated their input. I've been a believer in accreditation for a long time in certain components of public safety. But my question would be this. How do you, any of you, envision an agency being accredited having an impact on preventing a scenario such as the George Floyd incident?
Thank you, Commissioner. Let me start with panelist Director Register for his response.
Well, Commissioner Price, thank you. You know, how would it prevent it? You know, number one, I don't think this is the our standards require training. Our standards are going to deal with, and I see it now, I think a lot of the accrediting bodies is going to deal with the chokeholds and so forth. So on the simplicity part, I think that would play into it. However, standards, if we don't have them now, we are going to have standards with de-escalation. I can tell you in Florida, we have standards dealing with aftercare. Nothing that you saw in that video would even come close to the aftercare requirements that are associated with our standards. So that's a very broad question, Commissioner, but yes, I think it would help. It most certainly would, and there's a number of standards that would touch on what you saw in that video.
Thank you, Director. Sheriff Atkinson, your response.
Thank you. Yes, unequivocally, I think accreditation would manifest itself in a preventative manner, specifically as I discussed with the early warning criteria. So in that case where there were 18-plus complaints, those are known complaints just to the general public at this point, an accreditation policy that required both an early warning review, as I laid out in our best practices model, or a standard use of force tracking, something like Blue Team, both having standards would have and should have caught that. Now, that only works when you have the second part of accreditation, which is accountability. So with the accountability component, something like that, when you see that it's not addressed, that's when your opportunity exists. None of this will ever correct criminal behavior. That's a separate issue and has to be dealt on a case-by-case issue. But for systemic accountability and transparency, accreditation should have gone a long way with independent, rigorous review, and that goes back to my comments, not all accreditation is equal, but rigorous, independent review, doing what you say you're going to do, I think absolutely helps bring to light these types of issues. There's simply no excuse for that type of long-term derisive behavior. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheriff. Chief Hughes?
I certainly agree with what the sheriff just said as it regards to the early warning system. I would say, generally speaking, accreditation is going to promote professionalism within the organization. And once it's institutionalized and it's a way of life within your department, it's going to change the culture within your department. There are going to be sound policies in place. There are going to be training mandates. There is going to be a culture that I think will make those officers intervene, unlike what we saw in the incident in Minneapolis. I believe that it kind of goes back to what I was talking about in regards to background investigations and the selection process, the importance of selection process, and doing a more thorough background and making sure that the person that you're hiring is the kind of person that you want in your organization, in the culture that you're trying to develop. You should be seeking out applicants with servant hearts and not those that might be otherwise heavy-handed, or certainly not those that might have a past with another agency if they come over to your department as a prior certified officer. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Director Burgoyes, your response.
Just briefly, I'd certainly agree with and associate myself with the remarks that have already been made and perhaps go into another area with the standards for mandatory in-service training. Correctly selected, the topics could easily address this sort of thing. I agree with the comments about culture, and I think perhaps one of the glaring things here is supervision. Not knowing all of the details, but hearing some of the media reports, one has to ask about the first line supervision there that allows that kind of behavior. But I think it does come back to the professionalism and culture that's created by standards and accreditation.
Thank you, Director. Chief Nitsky.
I would agree with all the prior comments. I do think accreditation is an important part of policing. It forces you, in a sense, to review your policies and practices. I know for the Colorado Springs Police Department, through one of our accreditation processes, we identified issues with our own pursuit policy, and were forced to look at that. Shouldn't say forced. We actually voluntarily looked at that after we made a report to CALEA, and we changed it. We made it more restrictive. We looked at our practices and redefined how we did business based on our accreditation process. So I think it's very important to have.
Thank you, Chief. Other questions from commissioners?
Mr. Chair, David Rouse.
Commissioner Rouse is recognized.
Thank you. I appreciate all of the panelists today and the great testimony. There were a lot of great points made. There were two that struck out that I want to highlight and then have a general question for all of the panelists. The two points that I thought were particularly important for us to focus on it is the mandates without resources have to be avoided, and I think that's a strong statement that we need to completely embrace. And then number two is that all recommendations need to be evidence-based, and that too is another I think, recommendation that we should assure permeates through our process. My question for the panelists is how do we get buy-in from the officers, deputies, troopers, agents, and the agencies to embrace accreditation? What has been your all's experience in being able to get that buy-in, and what's the importance of that?
Thank you, Commissioner. We'll start with Chief Nitsky this time.
I think buy-in is very important. As I said, for us, we've been accredited for almost 30 years. I think the buy-in is knowing that as an organization, you are following the standards that have been established in policing. Now, granted, we follow ours through CALEA. Other people have state standards. If there was a national standard, it would be across the board. Here are the standards that every law enforcement officer in the country follows. I think you can get buy-in with that. I think you can get buy-in that everyone is held to the same standard across the country, and it's not just Colorado Springs Police Department being held to a standard that only 800-plus other agencies across the country is being held to.
Thank you, Chief. Director Berkowitz?
I would say that has to do a lot with leadership in the culture and the organization. And if you're hiring for character, these officers want that. They want that professionalism. And I think it's just sold on that level. It's in their interest to work with people who are well-qualified, are professional, are ethical. I think that's as simple as that.
Thank you, Director. Chief Hughes.
Well, as I said earlier, we've been CALEA accredited since 1989, and we display our certificates like a badge of honor. It's something we take pride in, knowing that we are the most tenured agency to be accredited, and something that we don't take lightly. But let me talk briefly about benefits, internally, externally, and then financial. Internally, you know, when you talk about where is the buy-in, it has to come from the top, but it has to permeate all the way throughout your organization. It does provide a greater accountability within your agency. It allows for improvement in the administrative function. It gives clear guidance through written directives and procedures. It provides improved training for officers. It gives you the ability to address operational readiness, and it provides justification when you go before your legislative body and try to acquire equipment, training, or other funds for your budget. You know, to the community, you got greater accountability to the public. Increases your level of service, increases the community confidence and respect from citizens and from government officials. And then, obviously, here in Tennessee, you've got the financial benefit, which is you get a discount on your insurance premiums per officer, which is certainly an incentive, a huge incentive that almost the discount alone almost pays for the annual cost itself.
Thank you, Chief. Sheriff Atkinson.
Yes, sir. Thank you. You know, essentially, I would summarize it this way. You know, leadership in this process of accreditation is about providing the culture, the vision, whereas the management is literally the fundamental art of control and the way you do it. But for line staff, cultural changes comes from the vision laid out by the leadership. And frankly, when you hold yourself to a higher standard from a leadership capacity, it does permeate at all levels of the organization. Anything that you work for or that you achieve, not everyone that can have it, simply raises a level of pride and esprit de corps in the organization. So it's about really owning it at all levels of the organization. It takes about 3.5 years, has been my experience in changing the culture of organizations. And, you know, sometimes that requires the very tough decision of removing those individuals who are not on board, who does not share the leadership vision to help spread this, because really that's where it's going to happen. You're not going to get saturation at all levels unless your leadership owns it, unless they empower it, embody it across the organization. But that's how you get it at the line level, is this sense of pride in what you do. It's a professional product, if you will.
Thank you, Sheriff. Director, Register.
Okay, yeah, thank you. I'll tell you, Chief Hughes and the Sheriff hit on the big one I put on top, was it starts at the top down from the CEO, from the police chief, sheriff, and so forth. And then when we say it goes all the way down to the bottom, we've got to catch our members as soon as they're coming on board. They've got to understand what accreditation is. Accreditation has been around a while, but most people, the common people, and really the people coming into our profession, they're well aware of college accreditation. They certainly know if their college that they went to is having problems with accreditation. They've heard of hospital accreditation and so forth. But a lot of them, before they come in and are educated, they have no idea about law enforcement accreditation. We have an opportunity here with what's going on nationally that I think law enforcement accreditation is going to take the front seat. But we've got to catch those men and women as they're coming into the agency and explain to them the importance. It's just important for that police department to be accredited as it is for their university or the hospital that they go to. Thank you.
Thank you, Director. Other questions from commissioners?
Directors, Commissioner Hawkins, I just want to make a quick statement. That's all.
Yes, Commissioner Hawkins, you're recognized.
So I just wanted to thank everyone for your hard work and your recommendations. I know it's very difficult, but I also know the reward that comes from accreditation and for our profession. I appreciate everyone's input, the responses to the questions, and thank you for all that you did and all the work that you've done with accreditation and making sure our professional field is at high standards. So I just want to say thank you for your testimonies, everyone.
Thank you, Commissioner Hawkins. Other questions from commissioners?
Director Keith, this is Craig Price. One follow-up to Dave Rausch's question, if I might.
Commissioner Price, you're recognized.
And this is for Sheriff Adkinson, because I believe he might have been the one that mentioned it, although I'm sure all of you could answer the question. But I think it was mentioned there's 800 agencies out of the 18,000 roughly in the United States that are accredited. Do any of you, Sheriff, do you have an idea, a sense of why that's so low?
Sheriff Atkinson, you're recognized.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Yeah, I think in a general sense, I think there's two issues here. There is certainly the financial issue, right? I mean, the concern is the national accreditation, for instance, with CALEA. I think there's some cost of what that, or some concern about the cost of that, and then also the relevance of a national commission in some, you know, when it's so different in every state. But, you know, I owe it to you to be honest in this regard, because I will tell you, I think another major factor here is a, to put it bluntly, I don't think it's a question of money in some regard. In some regard, it's a question of willpower and, you know, the willingness to have to submit your organization to external review. I mean, that's a tough thing to do as a leader. I've done it in an organization that had less than 25 people. I've done it, you know, in an organization that had hundreds of people. It's a tough thing to do, and so I think we are all, I think a lot of agency heads, particularly in smaller organizations, you know, there's a lot of concern that it is strictly a hammer, and if I painted it that way, I want to make sure I'm clear that that is not necessarily the entire case for sure. It does have an accountability, but it also has an improvement component in accreditation. But I would suggest to you one of the largest issues is tied to finance, but also this concern of external review, which quite frankly is important to be successful with accreditation.
Very good. Thank you,
Sheriff. Thank you, Commissioner. Other questions from commissioners?
Mr. Chair, this is Commissioner Smallwood.
Commissioner Smallwood, you're recognized.
So I've heard a little bit today about accreditation steering the culture of an organization, and I'll preface my question with the fact that I come from a police department who has gold standard CLIA accreditation, and we're very proud of that, and I think it's a great thing to have. And I agree with a lot of the comments that it requires buy-in from the top and bottom, and it also the willpower to get the job done. It's certainly a very difficult and yet attainable task. But I've also heard that the comment of unions are protecting folks that should not be protected. And I guess my question is, if the culture is steered, the culture of an organization is steered by some of these CLIA standards, to what level does the union influence the standards that are set into place? Because my knowledge is there is none. Maybe I'm missing the point.
Thank you, Commissioner Smallwood. And was your question directed to a particular panelist?
Any panelist that feels like they can answer that question. I would think any of them would be expert enough to know the answer.
Thank you, Commissioner. That question's open to our panelist, Director Register, you want to respond to that?
Well, I would submit to you that I don't see the occasion where the unions are driving standards, certainly not in the Florida system. You know, most of our standards are based off of Florida law that has been put in place, and also, you know, the Police Officer's Bill of Rights is the closest thing that comes to mind when you talk about a union issue and driving standards. But I would submit to you that in my experience, I do not see it as something being driven by the union. I'll certainly defer to the other panelists.
Thank you, Director. Sheriff Atkinson.
Yeah, I think I want to bifurcate my response about this, because I think at the accreditation level, I don't think it's a union issue at all at the accreditation level. But, you know, in full disclosure, I work for, again, organizations that had large union presence, and then an agency like my current agency, which is a will and pleasure agency, which there's quite a few of those in Florida. I think what the previous presenter was discussing when he was referencing union was in regard to disciplinary retention of individuals. So when you hear, you know, of people having multiple, you know, for instance, dozens of complaints, and we'll assume validated or not validated for the purpose of this discussion, I'm not sure that it matters. The concern is whether or not you could have a standard of accountability or a standard at the state level that addresses officer behavior and complaint intervention. I think you could. I think it could be separate from a union issue. But I do think clearly at the officer discipline level, there's impact in that, and the way it's contractually negotiated in some agencies. For sure.
Thank you, Sheriff. And if I could remind everyone to check the mute button on their phone. Chief Hughes.
The one who I think put that in context, and it was in reference to those officers that are retained, that are defended by unions. I think the point I was trying to make is I have personal knowledge of officers in departments and other parts of the country who, for one reason or another, ethically, let's just use an example, that they have lied, which is not criminal, but who wants an untruthful police officer on their department? Their credibility is destroyed, and if that is if that comes out in a court case or that comes out in the public, and if your hands are tied and you can't get rid of that officer, then I don't think that you can expect to have much buy-in, accreditation or otherwise, from someone of that. My point was that I was stressing the importance of getting it right on the front end so that you don't have to deal with it on the back end.
Thank you, Chief. Director Burgos?
I would agree with the previous comments. I don't think that unions have a big impact on accreditation. Michigan is a strong union state. Just a couple of thoughts. I do think the issue is the return of terminated employees by arbitrators. So the chief or sheriff or director has determined that that person doesn't meet the agency standards yet. They have to return to employment. You know, my agency is a licensing standard, and we recently received additional authority. And right now, that's an issue, the issue of employment versus licensing. If an arbitrator can order someone back to work, however, if the state is the determinant based on character fitness as to whether they have a license, so I see that as an emerging issue and something that's going to need to be discussed and work further on.
Thank you, Director. Chief Nitschke.
I don't work with a union at all. We just have associations here in Colorado Springs, but I would agree. They don't have a say in the standards that are set for accreditation. But I would point out, as this commission moves forward, as you can see based on the comments, you're dealing with different organizations across the country. You have some that are at-will employees. You have some that are civil service protected. You have some that have unions and some that don't. I would just caution you to take all of that into play as you move forward in this process, that this isn't just a one-size-fits-all. There are different organizations out there with different types of employees that you need to take into account when making decisions.
Thank you, Chief. Other questions from commissioners?
Hey, Phil, it's Don Washington. I have a question.
Yes, sir, Commissioner. You're recognized.
Thank you. First of all, let me just thank the panel. This is excellent. You guys have done a lot of work across many decades of serving our communities. I heard the word serve, the people we serve, the communities we serve, a lot in your presentations, so I really appreciate it, and I think I know where your hearts lie. I have a really simple, sort of narrowly tailored question, and that is, that is the duty to intervene or to intercede, is it directly assessed or evaluated or otherwise addressed in the accreditation process in your organizations?
Thank you, Commissioner. Was that question to be directed to a specific panelist?
No, sir. They come from various geographies and different commissions, different places, and I just wonder how they are evaluating or dealing with this whole concept of intervention or intercession. That's a big, big issue today, I think, in many communities. You know, does an officer stand by and do nothing, or does he actually do something? And as a former prosecutor, I recall prosecuting cases involving and defending, I'll admit that as well, when I was a defense lawyer, defending cases involving the failure to intervene. And, you know, from the Rodney King case forward to today, you know, this whole use of force concept is squarely on our plates right now. And this failure to intervene or intercede, I think, is a big issue for us to deal with. Given the cultural issues and the brotherhood and those kinds of things that we try to inspire in our organizations. So I'm sorry, I've spoken too long already, but yes, sir, Phil, it was intended for the panel at large.
Thank you, Director. Chief Nitschke, could I start with you?
Sure. I wish I could tell you if it was or was not directly impacted by accreditation, but I can tell you we have had a policy for years about intervening and about reporting unauthorized use of force that wasn't appropriate. We've had that as a policy for years and years.
Thank you, Chief. Director Bergwist?
I can't speak directly to the accreditation question because my agency does not do accreditation. However, I will say that that topic has been the subject of legislation in Michigan and worked on that issue. And my only caution to the legislators is that seems to be very clear. And when we see a very egregious example like we saw in Minnesota, that's clear to everybody. But it's a very nuanced situation. Officers arrive at scenes at different times and possess different information. I think, given the experience of this panel, we've all been in times and places where you were literally shoulder to shoulder with somebody and had a different set of information than they did due to the circumstances. So I think that overall that idea of duty of intervening is critical. However, as always, the devil is in the details as to how that's carried out.
Thank you, Director. Chief Hughes.
Yes, sir. I'm proud to say that on our challenge coin here at our department, we have the tagline that says, loyalty above all else except honor. And what I tell my guys is the meaning of that, I will die for you, but I will not lie for you. And I think that has to start, you know, obviously with me at the top, but I want every officer to know that to the lowest ranking line officer. We do have a standard in the TALEA policies, but we are taking a look at pulling that out of code of ethics and making it a standalone standard so that it gets more emphasis. We have policies within our agency that address that. But you have to talk about it, and you have to instill that in young officers during the FTO program, and you have to stress the importance of that to your supervisors so that it becomes part of your culture within your organization.
Thank you, Chief. Sheriff Atkinson?
Yes, sir. In short, it's covered in both accreditation and in Florida law that duty to take care of the care, custody, control of people in your custody and to render aid. Additionally, just to point out the differences as we discussed earlier, across the country, Florida has a relationship where the deputy is the alter ego of the sheriff. So as such, the sheriff can be held accountable for the conduct of a deputy. We've seen that happen in this state where they fail to take action results in disciplinary action against the sheriff, even though he or she may not be on scene. So it is certainly codified in accreditation. It's also in Florida law in multiple locations where there is a high level of responsibility.
Thank you, Sheriff. Director Register.
Yeah, Chief Hughes touched on the fact that both in our national accreditation and state, we have ethics standards and ethics requiring ethics policy and ethical conduct. Everybody on this call would certainly think that events we witnessed certainly was an ethical issue. So specific standard, the question from Commissioner Washington was, are there specific standards? I would submit to you that not specifically with the requirement of duty intervene, but I certainly do anticipate those coming to the different bodies, accrediting body, both here on the state level and the national level, hopefully in the near future.
Thank you, Director. Other commissioners with questions? Other commissioners with questions? Hearing no further questions, let me close by thanking our panelists once again for your time and your most valuable testimony and certainly your responses to the questions from our commissioners. On behalf of the Attorney General and his leadership team of Rachel Bissick and Jeff Avita and all the commissioners, your contributions provided today are most sincerely appreciated and will assist the Commission in their deliberations and work. Just as a note, please check the President's Commission page for additional updates of documents and information on the main Justice website, and we'll update it regularly when we receive information for posting. Before we close, I'd like to make sure everyone is aware, all the commissioners aware, that we will be holding an executive session next Tuesday, July the 7th. Commissioners will be receiving an Outlook calendar invite for this two-hour session, and we will only have one additional hearing next week, which will be on Wednesday, July the 8th. More information on both we sent to you later this week. Are there any questions or comments from commissioners?
Mr. Chair, what's the time on that executive session?
Mr. Smallwood, I think it's 2:00 p.m. Dean, am I correct?
Yes, sir. We're scheduled for 2 o'clock start time.
2 o'clock.
Thank you, sir.
Chairman, this is Ashley Moody. I just wanted to let you know I joined late to the call, but I was on the call and certainly appreciated all of the testimony and was delighted to hear some of our very own those that were testifying from Florida. So just wanted to let you know I joined the call late, and I apologize for that.
Thank you, Commissioner. Other questions or comments from commissioners? If there's no further business before us today, the President's Commission is adjourned. Thank you again, commissioners, for your continued dedication and commitment to the work of this commission.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks.
Thank you, Phil.
Thanks, Phil.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. All participants may now disconnect.